let me remind you, what do those italicized words mean? Why are they italicized? Can somebody tell me that? Carol? Okay, for clarity. When you read, the words that are italicized are words that are necessary to try to make something clear. And again, if you've ever studied languages, once you've studied it, you realize that to go from one language to another is not easy sometimes. You have to really work to translate from English into Chinese or English into something else or the other way around. And so when you go into another language, you have to sometimes put a word in just for clarification. Well, you'll notice in that verse it says, "Then Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man, and full of years." What if we left that "of years" out of there? In a good old age, an old man, and full, and was gathered to his people. As a matter of fact, when you read this in the New American Standard Version, here's what it says: "And Abraham breathed his last and died in a ripe old age, an old man and satisfied with life. And he was gathered to his people." You know, I read that verse as I was studying through this, and as I said, you come to chapter 25, and it's really just a transitional passage. If you'll remember the toldots are the sections here, and we looked at some minor toldots earlier in this particular section, but here is the break. And if you like to mark in your Bible, when you get to verse 12, you will want to put a little underline there. Now, these are the generations of Ishmael. And that is the next-to-last section of the book of Genesis. Early in the book, the toldots came very quickly. Those sections, they passed from one to another. And remember that what happens in those section breaks is that the writer stops and he picks up the storyline, completes one line of it, and then he goes back and he picks up the storyline and he tells the story, and then he goes back and gives us some details about that. And so what he's going to do in verse 12, he says, "These are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto him." And down through there, then he'll give all the lineage of Ishmael. And he'll tell all the way down to verse 18 that these men settled actually in defiance of their brethren. This was the characteristic of him. And then it goes down in verse 19 and it says, "These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old, and he took Rebekah to his wife," and it gives her lineage. And then it picks up the story of Isaac. And so we go from Abraham in chapter 12, and it tells us all about the story of Abraham and Sarah. And when we come to this chapter, this is the conclusion of the story of Abraham. This is where we finish. This is where life for him ends. And these verses tell us that Abraham breathed his last, and he died at a ripe old age. And that's where that terminology comes from, that he died from a good old age, a ripe old age. How old was Abraham? 175. He was 175 years old, and after he had lived to a good old age, a ripe old age, then he died. The Lord called him home. And I thought it was interesting to read through that verse and to study through that passage. And when you read that verse specifically, even in the New American Standard, you will notice, I don't know if you can tell on the screen behind me, but the words "after satisfied," where it says "satisfied with life," those are in italics, or italicized in the New American Standard. And really what it says is that he was an old man and satisfied. Even in the King James, if you take those words out, it says that he was died at a good old age, an old man, and full, satisfied. Here's a man who came to the end of his life, and he wasn't still struggling to make things happen. He wasn't still struggling to leave his mark on society. He wasn't still struggling to let people know who he was. I believe that that phrase in its original Hebrew structure simply means it is a commentary that is put on him like an epitaph, where it says that this is a man who died, came to the end of his life, God said, "You're going to die," and he laid down, died, and was a satisfied, full man. He was a man who had come to the end of life, and although he certainly would have areas of his life where he'd say, boy, I wish I wouldn't have done that. He was a man who was full. He was a man who was satisfied. There were not things that he was still trying to do. Well, I ask the question, why? We have taken a long time to look at Abraham's life as we've journeyed through the book of Genesis. And we'd ask the question, when we come to this man's death, and he's going to be put in the cave of Machpelah with his wife Sarah, his two sons early in his marriage are going to come, Ishmael and Isaac, and those two men are going to bury him in that cave at Machpelah. And he is a man that they're going to describe. And you wonder if somebody would have stood up and said, Dad is now in the grave, and Dad, when he died, was a satisfied man. He was full. He didn't have regrets. He was a man who was really satisfied with the things that took place. And so, with that in mind, I'm going to ask the question, why was Abraham satisfied? The Bible doesn't tell us that specifically, but I think if we look back over his life, I think you'll find four areas that Abraham had dealt with, and these are the things that by the time he died, he could say, I'm satisfied. I am settled that things are good in my life. And the first one is, he was surrendered to his God. All the way through Abraham's life, there is one thing that comes jumping out about him, and that is that he was willing to surrender himself to God. He wasn't fighting with God about what God wanted him to do. When he was back in Mesopotamia, God called him, and we don't know his religious history, actually. We're a little bit clueless as far as the details about how he grew up. I suspect that there is worship of Jehovah after studying through this and even knowing that he wanted Isaac's bride to come from that area. I think the reason that he did is because he knew there was a foundation of worship of Jehovah there. I believe that when Jacob will have the dealings with Laban, that it indicates here's a man who at least knew about Jehovah. Now, he's going to serve some other gods, but there's an understanding of who Jehovah was. But here's a man whom we would say was raised in a spiritual environment, but in spite of the fact that he was raised in a spiritual environment, God had called him to go someplace and do something, and he surrendered to that. He didn't argue with God and battle with God and make bargains with God. Abraham did what God asked him to do. That becomes characteristic of his whole life. When you study the life of Abraham, he's not a man who is at odds with God as far as surrendering to Him. If you'll think back through the things that we have studied, when he came to the land, God did not tell him exactly where he was going to go. God asked him to just go, and he surrendered to go. God asked him to surrender to his will in letting Lot go, and he let Lot go. Asked him to surrender in letting Isaac be sacrificed if it was God's will, and he let him do that. God didn't fully require that, but he was willing to do that. And all the way through his life, here's the first characteristic, that he is willing to surrender to God. And I don't think any of us are going to come to the end of our life and we're going to be able to say, put on my tombstone satisfied, unless we've come to grips with this idea that God is absolutely sovereign and I am willing to surrender to Him. And I think the first area that he had dealt with in order to be able to say that he was full or satisfied was that he had surrendered himself to God. Here's a second thing that I think that will indicate that he's satisfied as well. When you go back and look at his life, not only had he surrendered himself to God, but in a subcategory of that, we'd have to put this as well. He had maintained a close relationship with God. It wasn't a matter of him at one time coming to a place where he made a decision and he surrendered to God and did what God wanted him to do, and then he did that and then he just marched on without God. There are multiple times throughout the story of Abraham where it is obvious that God and Abraham are on speaking terms. That Abraham is able, more than able, to look toward heaven and talk with God. That God is able to talk with him. I put down here on the screen up here behind me two instances of that, and they're both connected. But in Genesis chapter 18, do you remember that Abraham is really struggling with this matter of the child being born, and he's old, and Sarah is old, and she is beyond childbearing years. And he's really struggling with this. And while he's struggling with this, as he sits in his tent in the middle of the day and basically is in his siesta, some men come by and he begins to talk with those men. He begins to discuss with them the various things that are taking place around. And finally, these men tell him, you know, Sarah is going to have a child. Sarah is going to have a baby. And Abraham's response is to laugh joyously. Of course, on the other side of the tent wall, in a subdued way, Sarah goes, something's wrong here because I can't have a child. But you know what is striking about that? These men, probably one of them a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ Himself, these men stopped and carried on a conversation with Abraham. He was comfortable with that. He was a man who did not fear talking with God. And all the way through his life, it is obvious that this man has a close relationship with God. He is a man who has tried his best to keep the communication, the lines of communication open to his God. Now let me ask you this tonight. I know you're here on a Sunday night and that tells me something about you. But sometimes we can simply get into the habit of doing right things. And I think all of us probably have gone through this battle of, I know the things that I'm supposed to do. I know very well that I should be in church on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. I know that. I know very well that I should be serving in some capacity. And probably at some point, most of you serve in the nursery, or you serve in our Grow Outreach, or you serve in some capacity in our church, whether it's a choir, usher, some capacity you're willing to serve. And you know that you should do that. You probably, I hope, read your Bible. I hope that we have ingrained in you the necessity of doing that. I haven't asked for a while. I'll try to do that in a week or so. But how many of you are still on the Bible reading schedule? And every other year we really stress to you, you've got to read these Scriptures. This is the food for growth. This is how you will grow. And you know that. You know that you should pray. But you know you can do all of those things and still not be in a close relationship with God. You can do all of those things as the Pharisees did and not have any kind of a real heartfelt relationship with your God. That wasn't Abraham. Abraham, as far as we can tell, had a very close relationship with God most of his life. Now again, we know that there were a couple of times that he made some decisions. Even in this chapter, it begins by telling us that Abraham took another wife, and it talks about a concubine that he had. And we know he took Hagar, and that was outside of God's will. But Abraham was a man who was striving. He was really trying as best he could to live for the Lord. And his goal was to be in a close personal relationship with God. Listen, if you're here tonight and that close personal relationship with God has been pushed aside, you're not going to be satisfied. You're not going to be full as he describes it. You're going to have to come back to the place where it is a personal relationship between you and God. It is not just a matter of doing the right things, of saying the right things. It's a matter of you being in a right, close, personal relationship with God. Does that exist? Is he the friend that you have all the time? Do you talk to him freely? Does he talk to you freely? Is there that closeness? Or have you gotten into a professionalism in a Christian life where you could say the right things and do the right things, but if we could really see the relationship between you and the Lord, it's grown cold? Listen, you'll not have that satisfaction that Abraham has when you have that. So here's the second thing. I believe when you look at his life, he had surrendered to his God. He had guarded that relationship with God. Here's a third thing. I think Abraham had come to a place where he learned to trust God in the difficult times. That is one of the areas where you'll either succeed in a grand fashion or you'll fail in a grand fashion. There are some people that when they come to that difficult time, that real struggle in their life, that automatically drives them to God. Their first thought is, I need to turn to God on this. But then there are some that have the opposite reaction. When you come to the difficult times, it's as though you forget God. And you turn to your own strength and try to figure things out, and you're upset with God, and why he's doing this, and how come I'm in this, and you're almost driven away from God. I believe one of the reasons that he was so satisfied, he was so full, that at his life he could simply be described as one who gave up the ghost. No heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching, awful death. He gave up the ghost. I think one of the reasons that he could do that is because he had come to the place where he trusted in his God during difficult times. God knows what he's doing. And God won't lose control. I've again put just a couple of illustrations on here, and these are things I think you'll remember. When it came to the battle between Isaac and Ishmael, Ishmael probably had made some pretty derogatory comments and maybe was antagonistic toward Isaac. And when they had the weaning of Isaac, and Sarah heard the comments that Ishmael made, and as a protective mother, but probably as one who had an intuition that this older son is not going to lead to harmony in the home, and he's mocking this younger son who is God's chosen, and she demands that the son and Hagar be cast out. Boy, Abraham's heart is torn. He loves this child. He's fathered this child. This is his nature. This is what we see of him all the way through. Is that he is a loving and kind man. And God says to him, Abraham, go ahead and do that. I'll take care of it. And you know what he does? Exactly that. He doesn't argue with God or try to bargain with God. He gives Hagar and Ishmael water and some sustenance, and he sends them off. He knows that this is an area where he simply has to trust God. It's a difficult area, but he's going to trust Him. He doesn't get mad at God. He doesn't get mad at his wife and all the people around him. He simply trusts God. He comes to another stressful point like that in chapter 22, when God looks at him and makes an unusual request. I want you to go up on top of Mount Moriah, and I want you to offer this child as a sacrifice to me. Your son, your only son. It's not as though God doesn't remember that this is His only son. God said, I want you to take your only son, and I want you to sacrifice him on Mount Moriah. And so Abraham, being the consistent character that he is, goes up on Mount Moriah, takes his son, takes the wood for the offering, binds his son and puts him on that altar, and takes the knife in his hand to slay his son. Hebrews tells us, believing that God would bring him back from the dead. And as he takes the knife in his hand, he has demonstrated, I trust my God. Even in the most difficult, even in circumstances that I have no understanding in, even at a time when I cannot figure out what God is doing and why, I trust God. He's got it under control. You see, I think when you come to the chapter 25 and you read this verse about a man who is satisfied, I think you have to put into the equation the man was satisfied because he trusted his God during difficult times. He was able to let God carry him through those things. He didn't feel the pressure of having to make those things all work out and explain them all. We have one more that we'll add to that. Number four is he secured his legacy. Here in chapter 25, we all go all the way down through verse 28. I want you to pick the story up with me in verse 21. We do not have a little bit of information in this life chronologically. Now, we have some things in here that tell us ages. For example, in verse 20, it tells us that Isaac was 40 years old at the time that he took Rebekah. And so we know that we know his age there. And then we know that he was 60 years old when his two sons were born. And so I wanted to go back and try to do a little more figuring, but it's possible that Abraham would have seen those grandsons born, but probably not. And so we don't know for sure. But let's begin reading in verse 21. It says, "And Isaac entreated or prayed to the Lord for his wife, because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated, or simply answered him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled together within her, and she said, If it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy body or thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over, like an hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old and when she bare them. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter and a man of the field, and Jacob was a peaceful or plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, we'll get into some of the details as we move forward in the life of Isaac. But you know what we learn from this passage? That Abraham had done everything he could to leave his legacy intact, his spiritual legacy intact. There's one particular phrase, or one particular verse, I would say, that begins to tell us about his son and his daughter-in-law. Go back to verse 21. I am assuming, and I am almost sure at this point, that Abraham is no longer on the scene. And having died, it says this about Isaac in verse 21. Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife. That word entreated is simply the word prayed. Here he is praying for his wife. And it goes on in verse 22, and it tells us that the children struggled together within her. This is Edom and Israel. This is foreshadowing the conflict between the Edomites and the Israelites. Two nations are, or verse 22, the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? Or why am I this way? And she went to inquire of the Lord. She went to pray. She went to talk to Abraham's God. You know, Abraham had done everything he could before he died to leave his legacy intact. Now again, there is sin in his past. There are wrong decisions that he made. We're not talking about a sinless man. But we are talking about a man who had a burning desire to see that his spiritual legacy was left intact. And when he died, his children understood who his God was. They understood what his God wanted him to do, and they were willing to carry on the task that he had put before them. And I think when Abraham died, he knew that. He had sent to Mesopotamia to get a wife for his son that he knew God had directed this son to. And this was going to be a wife that would latch on to and pursue the task that God had put before them. What was that task? Of building a nation. Surrendering to God. Of building a nation, of carrying on a group of people who would represent God in the midst of a dark world. They would be a bright light in the midst of dense darkness. And he wanted his son and his daughter-in-law and their family to carry on that legacy. And so at the point this man dies, he is able to say, you know what? I have done everything that I possibly can to leave that legacy intact. I don't die wishing that I had left someone else in charge. I don't die wishing that there was more that I had done with my son, more that I had done in my ministry, more that I had done in this or that. There are always more things that you're going to want to do. But I think he could honestly look at the Lord and say, I did what I could. I really did. I poured myself into this. And when I left those that were behind me with a good understanding of Jehovah God. I left them with a complete understanding of His holiness. I left them with a complete understanding of His intentions. I left them with an understanding of how to pray to Him. I left them with an understanding of His power because He's the one that knows about children in the womb. That's why Rebekah went to Him. If I have a child in my womb, why are they wrestling around in here? He said, well, I can answer that for you. You don't realize it, but there are two of them in there. He didn't have a sonogram. He just knew that. But Abraham had passed on to his son and his daughter-in-law a God who knew all of this. A God that was so big. A God that was so powerful. A God that was so omnipotent and omnipresent they could go to Him with anything. And now He's satisfied. And when it comes to the place that it said Abraham gave up the ghost, and he died in a good old age. It is telling us that this man died full. Full of life, okay, we'll take that. Satisfied with life, yeah, we'll take that. He is a man that has gone through his life and has said, you know, on my epitaph, you can put this word, full. You can put this word, satisfied. You can let people know that I've been as faithful as I can. Mistakes, yes. But I have left the people who are following me with an understanding of my God, His will, His purposes, His power, His knowledge. I have done everything that I can. I poured my life into this. And when you look at these four areas, you'd have to say that if a man is going to die satisfied, these are four of the areas that you're going to have to wrestle with. Have you surrendered to your God? Have you and are you maintaining a close relationship with Him? Can you trust God in those difficult times? Have you come to the place where you've realized that you need to train those who are coming up behind you? You need to leave your children, the children around you, the disciples the Lord has allowed you to work with. Have you left them with a legacy that says, here is God. This is who He is. This is what He can do. Do they know that because they've watched you? I'll have to tell you that if we'll do that, when we finish our life, we can simply come to the place where it will say of us, He gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man, and full and satisfied. And He was gathered to His people. And they took Him and buried Him in the cave of Machpelah. And even Ishmael, the wayward son, came back to that funeral. And Ishmael and Isaac worked together to put this man in the cave of Machpelah with his wife. And I think people mourned for him, because here was a man of honor, a man of integrity, and a man who had served God. Will they say that about you? If we're going to put satisfied on your tombstone, you're going to have to do that because you have been a faithful man or a faithful lady. You've come to the place where you've said, I'm going to do the basic things that I know I'm supposed to do. And these are the very basic things. We're not talking about spectacular doctrinal battles. We're just talking about doing the basic things that you know to do. Would you be described today as a faithful man or a faithful lady? Let's bow for prayer, please. With our heads bowed, in just a moment we're going to stand and we're going to just play through, and then we're going to sing through to finish that song, Faithful Men. But perhaps as you're sitting there today, you need to sit there and say, Lord, here's an area in one of these that I need to come to the place where I surrender to You. And that surrender may involve just coming back to a place where you have that close relationship with Him. You know what it is. And it's not God that's moved, it's you. Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Are you trusting God in the difficult times? Are you at the place where you've worked on leaving a legacy? Do those around you know the God of the Bible? Do they know Him because they've watched you? And I trust today, if God's working in your heart, that you will get things right with Him, that you'll surrender to Him and do as He would have you to do. Let's stand together, please. Now, Father, as we're standing before You today, we recognize that it is our part to surrender. Lord, You've put us in a place tonight where we've heard Your Word. And Lord, You've challenged us through the life of Abraham. I pray this evening that You'll help us to mimic his faithfulness to You. And Lord, I pray in spite of the battles that we face, that we might continually trust You, and that those who are watching might see You in us. Lord, thank You for Your kindness and Your patience. And I pray that You'll help us to see that and demonstrate that to others. Now, with our heads bowed, I'm going to ask Christy to play through one stanza of this song. And as she does, would you talk to the Lord and say, Lord, here's how You've spoken to me this evening, and here's what I'm going to do about it. Will you take a hymnal tonight, please, and let's turn to 380. I'd like to sing one stanza of this as we finish. I am looking to Jesus, giving all in the race, pressing upward to gain the heavenly prize, faithful men.
I am looking to Jesus, giving all in the race, pressing upward to gain the heavenly prize. Faithful men are my witness, struggled and died. Now they watch from the grandstand in the skies. Faithful men, gone before us. Faithful men who fight and stand. I want to follow in their footsteps. Goodbye, those faithful men.
And I trust you will leave with that in your mind, that I want to be faithful to Him. Thank you for being here tonight. We'll see you Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. You are dismissed.